Worried about your future in tech? Master new skills, accelerate your team's impact, and redefine what's possible with Pluralsight. We're more than just another online learning platform. We're shattering the skills gap and shaping future generations of technologists. Transform your work. Transform your team. Ready to tap in? Visit us at Pluralsight.com to learn more.
Sherelle is an author. She is an innovator and animal lover. Her memoir is A Schizoid at Smith, How Overparenting Leads to Underachieving. Welcome to the show, Blair.
Thank you for having me.
Excited to have you on. Tell us a little about your personal life, some more about your work, and what motivated you to put pen to paper and write the book.
My personal life was defined by having this condition, schizoid personality disorder, which is a maladaptation or a character disorder. So it made me more of a loner than most people. Where it became problematic is that I had a lot of anxiety about dealing with people, and that impaired my concentration. That, in effect, gave me a disability. Throughout childhood, the classroom, and in college, I struggled. But when you get into the employment world, of course, it's crucial to be able to focus and to conform to scheduling. So I had lifelong difficulties because of this, but I was able to harness it enough so that I worked in unconventional ways. And ultimately, during the pandemic, decided that I should address this condition because it accounts for high levels of homelessness. I had been told that by a clinician who was treating me. But if you look on Wikipedia, schizoid personality disorder, you will see that in New York City drop-in center, 65% of those who showed were schizoid. And in my opinion, I don't think they would show unless the weather was absolutely forbidding. I think people with this disorder are conditioned to keep their distance. The fundamental is that they have a social indifference, even a phobia about dealing with other people. So that severely constricts their activities, their potential, and it's dangerous in a lot of ways. It's dangerous because they may not go for doctor's visits or get preventative screenings or seek professional guidance, which can self-victimize, especially as they get older. We can't really operate fully on the internet, the phone, and in totally impersonal ways, totally effectively. We need to be seen and heard in circumstances that these people wouldn't allow, and that's why it becomes dangerous. I don't believe that this population, which is mostly docile, with certain exceptions, of course, which are sad and tragic, I don't think that the condition is harmful so much to others as it is to the person. And honestly, I think that there's more potential for happiness, that man is meant to be social than to be self-isolating and to live at this, and assures that you will live at a very low quality of life.
65% of the folks that came to receive some kind of care or services were diagnosed or could be diagnosed as having this condition.
Exactly.
That is an extraordinary number. Is it knowable what percentage just of the general population have this condition?
It could be as low as 1% or as high as about 4%. The problem is that the symptoms of avoiding people mean that they're not going to show up for therapy, for studies, mm-hmm. for diagnosis. the very conditions that I have precluded my seeking intervention for years until my situation became so untenable, so painful, so self-defeating that I was just in a whirlpool. But that's why it is underreported. There are probably a lot more schizoids than accounted for. But that's the paradox, if you will.
So you say you felt like you're in a whirlpool. So I mean, you felt like you were drowning, getting sucked down.
I just couldn't seem to move in any direction. I was working on a copywriting portfolio. I did a portfolio which was messier than most other. It didn't look as professional as other people's. But the issue was that I never wanted to show it to anyone. Huh. I was too afraid of making contact. And I think that schizoids operate assuming rejection or anticipating so much rejection, they avoid contact altogether.
So it's the anticipation of rejection. When you do find yourself having a nice casual conversation, is that, how does that feel? Is it uncomfortable?
I think it would be like if I were invited to a social situation, I'd probably get there a little late, sit in the corner. Somebody who was gentle would approach me and speak in a very kind, affable way. And I would gradually feel more comfortable. And I would see that not everybody is out to undermine me, that there are very nice people out there, and that the more normal people go into situations accepting that it's going to be 50% acceptance and 50% rejection, but they don't have the same trepidation. Another problem is, of course, if you're fearful of going into a situation, you will, quote unquote, shy away from it. And that's going to meet with a negative response if you're chronically tardy. Or if you're in fantasy, the defense that I learned as a child, if you're always daydreaming and inattentive and you're not listening, that's also going to meet. So the behavior, the symptoms become a self-defeating proposition in and of themselves. Schizoids are not willfully being disrespectful by not listening or by showing up late. They're just fearful, and that's how it plays out.
And I think that you said spiral out of control, or maybe I just wrote down spiral out of control.
Yeah. Well, it often felt that way.
And certainly for somebody who is on that spiral, who's on that path, and then finds themselves in homelessness, it really is. Is fair to call that inescapable?
Well, I think the fundamental is that they had poor relations with their family, or their family or parents somehow imprinted this. So it's unlikely that they would go to their parents for help. The parents don't want to be lifelong benefactors, which is also a possibility. If their kids can't work, what's going to happen? They'll end up on disability or homeless. I mean, it was suggested to me by the disability office that I stay out of an office, which is actually better, and get help with concentration and do writing because I could write. But freelance often became free, and I could not make a livable wage. So it was very, very difficult. Some of them, one that I know has an MBA and lived at home his whole life. Then when his parents died, he could not manage their household. Adult Protective Services moved him out of the house and into an assisted living situation, which he could also no longer afford because he couldn't manage financially. He didn't know how to budget. He had no life skills. He is now in an adult shelter. This is a man with an MBA because he had too much anxiety. Somebody who was more normal when they got the inheritance would have sought financial assistance, financial planning, would have done the more normal, would have by just definition said, I don't know how to budget, or I want to plan for my future. This individual did not. And that is how it could play out. And you have to consider, I'm a Smith graduate, this person had an MBA. So we're talking about people who may be intellectually okay, but emotionally are unequipped to deal with life's messiness, life's challenges, just not being able to make decisions. When I was at Smith, I could not form any kind of professional goal. I could not, throughout most of my life, develop confidence. I had too much anxiety about dealing with people and the people who were well-meaning and would have helped me the most. So then it becomes tragic. It's a self-victimizing pattern.
That does sound very tragic.
I didn't mean to depress you, no. But I just want people to know that a more balanced approach to parenting, I believe, could prevent this. Because the only defense a kid has to overwhelming criticism is not to listen. And so you can see that that defense becomes imprinted in school, and in employment, it's untenable because you're not going to be paid to daydream.
At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more.
So that's simple.
So your parents weren't necessarily the most nurturing or sympathetic to, because they probably had no idea that you had an actual condition?
Well, I also believe that the parenting causes the condition, because my clinician said that mother went to work on you and it is what forced you into withdrawal. Withdrawal is that psychiatric fantasy state of self-isolation and removal. So I go beyond. I mean, I do read what's said about the book, but I feel that it's an adaptation, a maladaptation. Words can be destructive. They're childhood words that linger with me even well into adulthood, that made me question my ability, my judgment, and so forth and so on. So I think that people who are more sensitive probably have a greater susceptibility to being damaged anyhow. I don't think my parents were evil or villainous or anything like that. I just think that they were poor parents. My mother was too overbearing. My father was very detached throughout my life. I think now there's more transparency about parenting, about emotional issues, that there isn't quite the stigma. I also think that people who really don't want to be married and have kids nowadays have more social options. When my father was in his prime and as a doctor, it was just expected that he would get married and start a family. I'm not really sure he wanted that. I do believe he wanted companionship. But I think now more men can stay single lifelong without the veiled suspicion of homosexuality, which was an issue in his day, or you know, the way of thinking. Now we have a lot more social options. Maybe we have too much transparency in our tell-all age, but I think that's better than hiding matters or not admitting to being capable. You know, if a parent really doesn't want to have a child or doesn't know how to handle a child, intervention is there.
So it's fascinating and tragic and so many different things. I was just having a conversation with my mom. I'm 46 years old. I was born in 1978, and she was telling me how parents would let their kids take naps outside. And I thought, yeah. Oh my goodness, I can't even imagine that today. And then fast forward 46 years or whatever it is, we've got bulldozer parents. And so, but just because it's a generational thing, it sounds like your parents were more, how would you describe them? Hands-on, hands-off, critical?
Well, I think that my mother was perfectionistic and that she was looking at me with adult expectations. And it used to be in the old day, in other centuries, that children were thought to be little adults, but they're not. Her expectations were unrealistic. She was controlling. She was well-meaning. I don't think she was really happy in her housewife role, but I don't think that was the. I think she just overdid parenting. She was overly intrusive, overly controlling, domineering. When people read this book, they're not schizoid, but they do talk to me often about a domineering parent. My father and my mother were a poor match, and I think part of his absenteeism was that he was avoiding her and the marriage. So what I got was either abusive or absentee. I didn't get like a normal nurturing. I don't remember my mother ever telling me she loved me. When we went to other place families, it just seemed more relaxed than ours. There wasn't the tension between my parents, and there wasn't that I was felt like I was scrutinized or monitored or set up with standards that I couldn't fulfill. And the worst possible thing is that my father said I wouldn't do my homework, and my mother started doing it. So that totally crippled me intellectually. I had no faith in my abilities. So.
I could see that. Thanks for nothing, Mom.
Well, I mean, again, none of this was ill-intentioned. There was nothing. There was the Spock book. That was about it when they were parenting. And just as you said, I remember being let out to play for hours and hours, even when it got dark. Nobody showed any particular concern that there were cars, that there were possibly. Nobody thought of a predator or any of the risks that we nowadays realize, sadly. It was a more innocent era, I'm sure.
So, from your estimation, what is to be done? Is this a treatable condition? Is it one that can be healed?
Well, I think it can become more manageable. Fortunately, now there's remote work, so somebody doesn't have to go into an office. There are jobs and professions that are more isolated, so the person may have an easier time concentrating. There's cognitive therapy. There are medications available. Yes, there is hope that it's somebody with this disorder is completely cured. I don't know about that. They may retain schizoid traits, but I think if they can learn that there are people, it's called whole objects, that have both good and bad traits, and not see people as overwhelmingly rejecting or negative or manipulative or out to do them in, that's a big first step. And fortunately for me, I gravitated to kind and nurturing people, and I did notice that the symptoms subsided. I was more focused. I was able to be more punctual. I felt better at about myself when you get that kind of feedback and support. So yes, I think it is manageable. I don't want to paint a rosier picture. I don't know that I'm ever going to become the big social mixer or overly gregarious, but I don't really have to be, and I'm not a recluse or a hermit. And of course, as you get older, you really have to be realistic that you can't. That's why there's assisted living. That's why, the medical end is. But if you're not open to that, you can see your life could play out like the man I described. You could go from an affluent Westchester home to a group home because you never learned life skills. You were too afraid of approaching anybody who may be able to help you and navigate the challenges of life because we can't all go it alone. I'm not skilled in, I'm skilled to write a book, but that doesn't make me skilled in a lot of key areas. And you have to be smart enough to know that if you want to survive.
Diagnosing someone with this, it sounds like it'd be pretty tricky because I would resist going to get to have the conversation even initially.
Yes, I have a friend I met in the Jung. I took a week-long Jung Center course, and she told me that it was very, very difficult to treat, that the patients would insult her, that they created a fake world. It is difficult. I mean, ultimately, for any kind of condition, the person has to be receptive, whatever it is, and really want to improve. And if you don't, not every schizoid is impaired, however. And you probably know people that seem more reclusive. They never talk about a girlfriend, a wife, friends, because they probably don't have any.
Mm-hmm.
That kind of loner. And that's fine if you can become a truck driver or a lab, a janitor, whatever profession allows you to have a more marginal, but most jobs will have a higher level of interaction. But as I said before, there is remote work, which I think would be a good option. For a schizoid to do freelance, they're going to be more challenged about getting payment, about meeting deadlines. It's just the way I was with my copywriting portfolio, that I never seemed to want to show it to anyone. And my father would get very exasperated about, well, what's the point of being talented if nobody knows about it? Emily Dickinson was thought to be schizoid, and most of her poetry was discovered after death.
Really? That's really interesting.
Yeah.
Hmm.
But in her day and age, you could function, a woman could stay at home lifelong.
So what would your advice be to people who feel they may be suffering from this, living with it?
I would get help. I would steel yourself, force yourself to go see somebody and reinvent your life, because it's painful to live with this. It's not just the unemployment. It's the litany of you don't think, you don't listen, you're weird. That kind of negativity that you're going to get. Can't hold a job, they'll say to you, all these different disparaging things, because people unfortunately strike at something they don't understand. Somebody with a phobia isn't out to inconvenience other people or hurt them. They're not that skilled at interacting, and they have too much anxiety about articulating, or they may lack insight into what's actually going on. I probably thought it would get better over time if I found the right job, the right niche, but it didn't. The condition itself, the disorder, undermined me in every single, whether it was using a computer, in a class, playing golf, whatever it is. If you're impaired, it's going to sabotage you. So I'm not saying that schizoids need to become gregarious on their own time. They can do what they want as reclusively, but to the extent that it's beneficial to them, certainly in getting financial guidance, legal, medical, I think it's crucial, especially as they get older.
That certainly does make sense. Well, Blair, thank you so much for coming on and sharing a little bit about your story. Where can people learn more about you? Where can they get their copy of A Schizoid at Smith, How Overparenting Leads to Underachieving?
The website is Rocking Tributes, and the book is available from Amazon, Thrift Books, any number of suppliers, including Atmosphere Press. If you go under my name in Google, all of that exists as well. Blair Sorrell. So I thank you very much for having me.
Yeah.
And I hope that the schizoids who are listening will do more than just sit on it.
I hope so as well. So if you enjoyed this as much as I did, show Blair your appreciation. Share today's show with a friend who also appreciates good ideas. Go to Rocking Tribute. Is it Tributes?
Tributes, yes.
RockingTributes.com. and pick up your copy of Schizoid at Smith, How Overparenting Leads to Underachieving on Amazon and other places. And I will link all of those in the notes of the show. Thanks again, Blair.
Thank you very much, George. Have a great day.
You as well. Until next time, remember, do your part by doing your best.
Thank you.